I'm Haley.
I'm John.
And I'm Will.
And we're from Crimson Comet, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now, the opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
Welcome to Gallifrey Public Radio, a podcast dedicated to everything Doctor Who. Join us each week for discussion ranging from Hartnell to Capaldi. I'm your host, Jay Witten.
Did you just say womp womp?
And my co-host, Haley Malley.
I am a ray of sunshine.
And Keir Hansen.
Flashy lights, Christmas, woo!
Spoilers.
We will be discussing news rumors as well as episodes that have already aired. But don't worry, if we get into anything too serious, we'll warn you again.
Welcome to episode 140 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where everything you know is subject to debate, and anything we might have said is strictly hearsay, stricken from the record, and deemed inadmissible. In fact, I might not have even said that just now. Or that. I'm not even here. I'm your host, Haley Malley, and also not here with me this week, I have Jay Witten. How are you today, Jay?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself?
I'm doing pretty well. And also not here with us is Keir Hansen. How are you today, Keir?
When I was here, I was doing extremely well. But that's not over now. Or maybe it is. Yeah. So this week, we have to look at the calendar and realize it's time to take a snapshot of all the details that we believe to be confirmed about the state of Doctor Who Series 9, or rather 35, depending on how you're counting. So from the directors that have been locked in, to the writers penning our episodes, to the characters old and new, there's a lot to expect and a lot to really be eager. So, got all that to look at. Also, UNIT. So, that. Where do we begin?
Normally I'd say at the beginning, but this is Doctor Who, so that's right out the window. That's the one place you don't start.
First things first, but not necessarily in that order. All right. Well, from what we know, we always know that we bookend the season, or lately we have always made sure that we bookend the season with Moffat at the helm, because this is his degree of control over everything that's happening at this point. He will be writing the first two episodes that we've known for a little while now to be titled The Magician's Apprentice and The Witch's Familiar. Hedy McDonald taking the directorial helm on this one, which is going to be a really interesting thing to see happen, because with the work that we're familiar with and just the expectations coming off of just the strength of the close of Series 8, it's and knowing obviously her or Hedy's tenured from Blink, I mean, in control of a Moffat episode at that point, a lot of expectations here.
Yeah, and I mean, this is one of those things that I know that whether or not it turns out to be a good episode, it's going to be a fun ride, because Moffat can do that. When he opens the season, it's usually a fun, at least fun. And, here we're getting the return of Missy. We're getting Kate Stewart coming back. So a lot of the things that were left, not necessarily unresolved, but a lot of the stuff that's going to carry over from the end of Series 8. So it's going to be a continuation story. So this is going to be, it's going to be exciting to see.
Mm-hmm. So it was through Moffat's own admission that it was only necessary that she be carried over, because apparently in the story that he's penned, it's something where this is all going to be reactionary to the events where we closed out. Now, whether or not that's taking into account the kind of the blip we had with the Christmas episode where the waters smoothed a bit between Claire and the Doctor, they sort of, put all of their lies and misdirections back on the table and kind of reaffirmed their commitment to one another. And we've softened some of the spikes, so to speak. This is going to be important, because I think it's going to set the tone for a lot of the themes, or at least some of the major plot points that we're going to continue to wrestle with as the season goes on. So where do we traverse from there?
Well, the episodes 3 and 4 are going to be written by Toby Whithouse. So we've got another, actually, is this another of the two-parters? Because I know we've got a lot.
Yeah, I think this technically is considered a two-parter. Well, I don't know if it's been confirmed as such, but I think they're technically going to be a two-parter. They've never been described as being separate stories. They were shot together, part of the same production block. As far as the guest stars, I think because of the fact that this is where we've got Paul Kaye, and that announcement, you know, Paul Kaye, obviously from Game of Thrones, and Colin McFarlane, Stephen Robertson, Sophie Stone, they I think were associated with both episodes.
Yeah,
so
everything I'd seen had pointed to that. So actually here it is. I just found it. This is actually the second two-parter of the series. Mm. So I'm not sure where that's confirmed or anything, but it does say it here. So I'm going to blame the Gallifrey Times if it's wrong. No, so.
I think it was actually because of basis on articles with Paul Kaye, because of the amount of time he was spending in makeup.
Okay.
And because they were doing it as in that production block and he had to sit for I don't know how many hours in this elaborate thing, whatever it is that he's going to be involved with, I'm assuming they're creating a new alien for this one, because with a lot of the set photos, they had not been doing a lot of the tipping of early spy shots of new rubber monsters to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we get in the next block.
Right.
And this is where I'm not exactly certain whether we're dealing with a two-parter or not. They do share cast, but they're separate writers for episodes 5 and 6. So you've got tentatively titled The Girl Who Died and The Woman Who Lived. Right. Sounds like we're related at that point.
Yeah.
But these are the ones where we get Maisie Williams.
Okay. And so, yeah, also Rufus Hound and David Schofield, who's reportedly playing Odin. So you can assume some North mythology in this one.
I would guess so, but the photos you've seen of Maisie's costume, she's wearing a three-pointed hat, which is, at this point, we're talking, 18th century.
Yeah.
I don't know. This is going to be a wibbly-wobbly, I think.
Right. Knowing almost nothing about what's supposed to happen in this episode, or two episodes, it's what I'm looking forward to most.
Yeah. And, of course, for the first of those, for episode 5, you got Jamie Matheson coming back, who's always an absolute thrill to have along. Moffat is actually co-writing on that one,
right,
which leads me to believe that this is one that's establishing some serious business. Are we talking about companions? I don't know. And then, as we had been discussing and getting really excited about previously, episode 6 is actually the one where Catherine Tregana is going to be taking the helm for the writing role, or has already taken on the writing position. This one's already in the can. So, large cast, too. Large supporting cast. It'd be interesting to see where that one comes out. And then things get interesting.
Yeah. So with episodes 7 and 8, this is the third two-parter. So, I mean, this is turning into a Colin Bacon. Yeah, Colin Bacon. This is turning into a Colin Baker season here with all the two-parters and everything. But so it's, this is the one that is reportedly going to feature the Zygons. Ingrid Oliver coming back, supposedly as Osgood. Mm-hmm. So
Kate Stewart back in there. And this is also where we're going to have Peter Capaldi playing alongside his former Thick of It co-star Rebecca Front.
Right.
So that can be kind of interesting, too. We've had, in the extended universe, we've had a lot of fun with familiar characters when Zygons were involved taking on family member roles. So I'm just going to put a potential, I'm not even going to bet a quarter, I'm just going to put like a dime maybe out there and just say, I got a feeling there's some Zygon family involved in this one, and just kind of leave it at that. Whether they put Rebecca Front in some sort of maternal role to Osgood or something of that sort. Just a thought. But Harness, obviously, very big in the spotlight right now because of Strange and Norrell. And his script film adaptations or miniseries adaptations of the book series, which are huge right now. If you have not gotten ready to get yourself shoulder deep in enjoying Strange, please do. Be so glad that you, because this is a reassurance that you do not have to have a multi-season massive universe to tell a great supernatural story. Even period based, and still appeal to everything from young audience to, to your grandparents would be able to do this as well. So please, please, please. All right, I'll step off my soapbox now.
So the next ones that we get, we know precious little about, actually, and that's episodes 9 and 10. So far, all I can remember, I think we've got a new story talking a little bit more about it, but everything up to this point has been, there was a picture of, you know, the episode 10 script, which had the title and writer and everything blocked through, blurred out.
Right. So, we only know the fact that with episode 10 specifically, episode 9 is just a cloud at this point. Mm-hmm. Episode 10 is the one we've been hearing about just this week because of the return of Riggs.
Yes.
So, and we know that Sarah Dollard, who wrote for Being Human, and the director is actually from the Merlin series. For those of you who are familiar with that Brit series as well, I got a chance to delve a little bit into it, and it was just taking on a lot of content at the time. So that's on the back burner for me for the rest of Merlin. I know you can go ahead and tweet me now. That's fine. But Being Human, totally sold on. So recognize Sarah Dollard work on that. But good to see that Joyvan Wade's going to be back to bring the Riggsy character back. And all of the rumor mills that are grinding away right now as to whether or not we are now seeing the potential first glimpses of a new companion.
That would be interesting because they really haven't done that since the introduction of Ace. Bringing on a character with the current companion in terms of like switching them over. Because I mean,
it's kind of a similar, you know, you've got a troubled kid.
Mm-hmm.
Who's been exposed to the larger world and sort of wants to take on that student and professorial kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Because that's kind of the reaction you got from Riggsy, as he sort of caught on to the bigger picture through Flatline. So I think that could make a really interesting parallel. It worked extremely well for Sophie Aldred and the Ace character, so I don't see why it couldn't work again in the modern context.
Yeah. But we'll have to wait and find out, though, because that's all the information that we've got on these episodes. But
we do know that Mark Gatiss is going to be in there for one of the final three. It's pretty much a safe assumption that Moffat's gonna wrap up the last episode. But I mean, we're dealing with six two-parters. I mean, or potentially six two-parters, the way that they're stacking right now. So that's there's been a lot of discussion lately, and it actually whether it was some of the discussion with Chris Chibnall and some of the producers, and we've got a news item that's kind of related to the production staff where somebody might be speaking a little bit out of turn, but we'll get to that in a second, where we've got the concept of Capaldi now into his second season. Moffat always discussing the fact that you look at Doctors when they get into their second season, they've really had an opportunity to feel the character out and make it their own, with the exception of Eccleston, of course, because he never really got the opportunity to fully realize. But he reflects back on Tennant and Smith's second seasons within role and how much stronger it was, not only for their performances, but for the writing staff, because they had a firm foundation to stand on as far as what they could ask of that actor. So it allows you to be able to really write to their voice and their skill set. So you end up getting ones that are really catered to their strengths. And I think that's what we're going to be headed into. It's one of the reasons why I think, and I think it was actually Moffat who echoed this, who said the reason why you're seeing a lot of these two-parters is because there's material that they want to cover. And there are concepts that they want to play out that require more time simply to tell the story in full. So they're going back to a kind of a classic feel of multi-episode stories to convey what they want to say or to play out some of these major themes, which, I don't know, I'd like to pick your brains on this, whether or not that means that we're going to have something that we started to get a feel for once again in Series 8, and that is a more well-knit, well-plotted series where there is a specific, I want this character to evolve from A to B. I want this this problem within their relationship to progress from, you know, C to D, and so on.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that, because we haven't had this kind of the stacking of stories like this for a long time. Mm-hmm. So it'll be interesting to see. I mean, because I'm hoping that it's more than just, you know, three separate two-parters. I hope that we do get a kind of thread that goes throughout the series. It doesn't have to be, you know, a continuous story arc. I'm not looking for anything, you know, major. You know, if you miss an episode, you're completely lost on the whole season. Mm. But, you know, just something that, like, you know, you establish at the beginning of the season that Missy is still around, Missy's a threat, and she's doing something. And then you have other stories that all have their own kind of, you know, their own kind of problems and things like that. But there's always that background threat of, okay, but what is Missy working on right now? What are we trying to do to stop her in the meantime? And, you know, that could be one way of doing it. So I'm hoping that that's kind of what we get with all of these, you know, massive stories.
Mm. Yeah, and I know I always prefer more serialized television, and I don't expect them to go to strictly serialized with Doctor Who, but at least having breadcrumbs tying the whole season together, that's what I'm looking forward to. And I think we're going to get more of that this season than we have in the past.
Okay. Hopefully.
Do you feel, because there was the rumor mill, obviously, as to whether or not with Jenna's contract renewal, she had only stated that she had, she really wanted to make sure that she had made it through the midpoint of the series. We now know, obviously, that she's at least in it through about the third production block, which takes her to about episode 9. You know, what do we think about an exit strategy? And I know we're going to end up discussing this with every episode that airs. You know, are we seeing the light, you know, as the door starting to open or what have you? But
I thought I remembered seeing something that said she was in all the way through the series.
Moffat had said that that we've got her through the end of the series, but she had only said that she had seen it through to the midpoint, and they hadn't really discussed, you know, as far as whether or not she was involved in the latest production block. So,
I'm not sure. It's one of those things. I mean, I feel like we've beaten the horse to death. It's, you know, oh, well, she's going to be leaving at the end of series 8. She's going to be leaving at this point. She's going to leave after the Christmas special. Oh, now she's in through series 9. It's, you know, at this point, I want to stop thinking about it. I want to just enjoy her while she's there. And when she finally does leave, I hope it's a good exit and that we get a solid companion to replace her. It's so difficult to try and, you know, track whether or not she's going to stay and this, that, and the other. And it's, you know, at this point, there have been so many fake outs that it's frustrating to hear.
True.
Right.
Well, let me turn it around. Let me sort of ask this of you from a different perspective then. Do you think there is an advantage or a disadvantage to having, similarly to what we had with Donna, with Clara, where you end up with a companion that you had met once before? Or do you think there may be an advantage to having someone coming off the cold, they just hit it off, they get exposed to the great, you know, universal wonders, and they walk in the door and go?
I don't know. To me, it just comes down to who the companion is. I don't think necessarily having them introduced ahead of time really improves or detracts in any way.
Okay.
Yeah, I have to agree that it's more about the character than the circumstances around them. I mean, some characters would do better off by the slow introduction or the repeated viewings, but, you know, you've got the other characters that it makes sense that they see it and they're like, no, I'm completely bought in, I'm going.
I guess the only reason why I bring it up is because I'm starting to see that they're, and I wouldn't call it maybe a division or a faction within the Whovian base, but it's a matter of people that believe, you know, we get so invested in companions, in primary companions, secondary, tertiary companions, you know, a single episode or you know, handful episode pseudo companions. I'll leave them off the table. But as far as their principal travelers, we get so emotionally invested in them that there is a camp that believes you have to earn the right to get the key. And that someone who just walks in and charms the Doctor either with their eyes of wonder or their ability to grasp the impossible or whatever it is that you know catches his eye, is immediately invited in. And we had a couple of instances just within the last season and a half where he has come across individuals where he was ready to invite them in and they turned it down.
Yeah. Well, look at what was the engineer's name from Mumio and the Orient Express.
Sure, yeah. Who could have been real charming, could have been an interesting, you know, sort of sidekick, really more of a sidekick than anything else,
yeah.
Because it was very much kind of an equal mindset rather than a counterpoint.
Yeah. Honestly, he kind of struck me it might be a little bit of a stretch, but he almost struck me as a like modern day Jamie, where you could have had that friendship between the two of them. You know, it wouldn't have been, hey, you need to be here to keep me in check and, you know, fill in the spaces that I'm missing in my personality. It would be more of a partnership or a friendship.
I worry that any potential companion that is too chummy and too easy to roll with all of the idiosyncrasies and foibles doesn't make for interesting dramatic contrast. So if you're going to have someone like that, because that really does make for great buddy moments, you're going to have a third individual.
Yeah. Yeah, so you would need the Claire there to keep the both of them in check, basically. Mm. So, I don't know.
And I mean, Claire is also... What?
Well, I'm just thinking, I mean, just within recent past, I mean, you take the Ponds, and Amy got to a comfort point where she ran with everything.
Yeah.
That 11 pitch. But even at those moments, Rory was kind of the, I need a little more explanation. I need a little more justification. I'm not so sure about this. Can we please just discuss it for five more? Okay, we're not discussing this. Okay, we're jumping. Okay, great. Oh, look, I'm dead.
Yeah.
But at least you've got that, because you've got somebody to be the voice of either side of the viewing audience that says, no, this is a dumb idea. This is bad. I'm with Rory on this one.
Yeah.
Sorry. Or to call the doctor out and say, yeah, you know what? You're being a bit of a prick right now. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mr. Capaldi.
Well, then Claire is also coming up on being, you know, one of the longest running companions we've had in Monarch Who. So is it time for her to move on?
I definitely think that it's reaching that point, because I want to see, because we've had the, you know, we've had her with Matt Smith, who was, that was not
good.
It's because of the storyline that was being told, because of the story,
because
that
was, she wasn't being given a consistent character to convey,
and she couldn't be a part of the story. The mystery was around her and about her, but she couldn't be included in it. Right. You know, whereas with you know, with Capaldi, she is the companion. She is there. She's filling that role instead of being a plot device. Mm-hmm. We've talked about that, how they, you know, you could tell that they were friends, but it was always, they're always at odds. And then there's the lying and the fighting. And it's just, it became this thing that it was almost painful to watch at times. So I want to see them actually have that friendship now. I want to see what we were promised at the end of the Christmas special, you know, with them running off to the TARDIS, just excited to be together and go to another adventure. And that, I want some of that. I need that breath of fresh air after everything that we've been through. So there is more story to tell with her, but I don't know how much more, because we've kind of run the gamut with her now.
Yes. But as a result, I mean, that's double-edged, because now that she has established herself with such strength, and has become such a fully realized character, you know, three-dimensional and endearing. I know I keep using that word a lot over the last couple of months, but that's the only one that I can really use to accurately convey. She's won the viewing audience over, because she has proven not only her merits and her abilities, but her commitment and her concern beyond herself, well beyond herself. So, and we know that we're getting that character every week. That the idea of the, you know, Claire plus one, plus two, Claire plus three,
right,
is over. So that's, even with the Christmas episode, they got a little, maybe right before it aired, we thought, maybe they're dodging this whole story by giving us another, you know, Clara facet, and they don't have to worry about continuity. Well, thankfully they didn't. But I think she has earned the right to a phenomenal send-off. Something that's befitting the emotional investment that she has made in the Doctor's life and in the fan base's hearts. So it's either going to be, and I think, was this something we talked about maybe 2 months ago? She's either going to have to get the happily ever after or a blaze of glory.
Exactly. Yeah, we did.
Nothing so, in between will do.
Yeah.
Precisely. Precisely. Anything else is small potatoes.
Yeah. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how it plays out, because it honestly, the way that they've handled Clara so far, it could be that everyone is just fired up to have a full season with her, and then, you know, by episode four we might be like, no, she needs to go. It's just, I'm tired of it.
Has she always laughed like that? Make it stop.
I did. I don't remember the last time I've ever seen a companion handled so inconsistently and become such a, I mean, because it's not a divisive thing in the sense of, like, you've got the people that love her and you've got the people that hate her. It's you've got the people that love her this week but hate her the next, and vice versa. It's just an interesting dynamic to watch sometimes, but I'm hoping that we get more solid story from her like we did last season, but we'll have to see.
You know, seeing her second season makes me wonder what would have happened if they'd done a second Martha season.
Yeah.
Where they'd gotten over the crush thing.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in that camp.
Because every time I would start to like her, I'd be like, oh, she's a cool companion. And then she would say something else about how she's got a thing for the Doctor and be like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, honestly, that's the biggest downfall of that character. She was fantastic. I loved everything about her except for that.
And they kept harping on it.
It's like, oh, wait, you've almost forgotten? Here, let's bring it up again. But,
okay, but, that has nothing to do with Series 9, but whatever. I was going to say,
we've gone completely off the rails at this point.
Nah, couldn't possibly be.
Oh, all right. Well, are we ready to move into the news?
Yeah. So this week, we started actually alluding to some of this in our earlier discussion, but we've got some news regarding Series 9 that kind of relates to when we're going to kick this series off, but it depends on who you believe.
It will make a nice birthday present, maybe.
I'm just saying. A little earlier this week, as of our date of recording here, we had an incident where one of the principal producers for the series was getting really excited about the fact that they're wrapping up another production block. So and Nikki Wilson was out there saying, you know, another successful day on the TARDIS. Doctor Who is even bigger and better this year. Really excited about it, and that's fantastic. There was a response to a fan tweet that wanted to know, obviously, when the series was going to be returning. How they phrased it was something about roughly when the show would be back, you know, which is obvious. I mean, Twitter is one of those great bridges that allows you to extend a line of communication to the people that you emulate and whom you admire, and hopefully, based on their schedule or their desire to kind of communicate with us unwashed masses, will respond back. She did tweet back, "We'll be back in September." The tweet was almost immediately deleted. Nothing ever really disappears from the interwebs.
Well, no.
Right.
So, but here's the thing, and this is something that I was actually talking about with two other Whovians this past weekend, and that had to do with the fact that we've always kind of recognized the Whovian season as kicking in somewhere around Labor Day. Or how we relate it to Labor Day. It's usually the weekend before Labor Day, as it falls here in the U.S. Mm-hmm. Because I know, you know, the last couple seasons, Labor Day, for me personally, that relates to Dragon Con, a big convention down in Atlanta, Georgia, and which always falls on Labor Day weekend. And lately they've been allowing us to have private screenings of Episode 2. So that's how I kind of, in my head, I do the math here. So if that's the case, I know personally that Labor Day falls very late this year as far as the U.S. calendar, the U.S. holiday calendar. It's typically somewhere around September 1st, 2nd, 3rd. This year it's like 7th, 8th or so because it about the way that the calendar falls across the month scatter. So I know also since it's been confirmed that we are in a consecutive series, right? No breaks. That's
yay.
That's given. Thank cripes. Thank Rassilon. And that as far as we know, we're a 13-episode season. It hasn't totally been absolutely cast in stone. But if you take Christmas episode, literally, we sat down with calendars and did this just today. Take the Christmas episode, back up 3 to 4 weeks, and we played around with both 3 and 4 weeks to give that buffer time, mm-hmm. where they usually just, you know, they rebuild their PR machine. So that would be your finale at that point, 4 weeks prior to Christmas. And then start backing up weeks from that. And that puts you at second Saturday of September, I believe.
Yeah. Well, just the last 3 years, it's fallen end of August, beginning of September. That's when the show is aired.
Right. But with us, I mean, we come down to counting each and every week as more of a delay.
Yeah, so. you think you've got it bad. I mean, go on. We have to come up with content for every week that there's no show on. It's ridiculous.
We got some pretty good stuff stacked up. I'm pretty pleased about what we're doing to fill the rest of this. So it leaves a lot of people wondering, you know, when are we going to start to get the first teasers? Are we going to get, are we finally going to get some of the webisodes?
What?
I mean, that was a big carrot to dangle in front of the fan base, and we got nothing last series. Not to take anything away from the series itself, but that was something that I know we, the three of us, were really kind of excited about because it's a nice little diversion. It's like getting little bonus material, literally, that either leads us into the next piece of content that we're going to get or is something to just sort of extend the story ever so slightly just because, you know, it's available for folks who want to seek it out. If you really care about it, if you really love a show, here's this little extra gift to you that we shot because we had an extra day on set.
Yeah, and that's not taking anything away from what they did do with the Doctor Who Extra, which, I mean, that's great as well. It's just that's not the way that it was announced. That did not seem like what we were going to be getting. So, it was fun to watch and it was enjoyable, but it's not what we were expecting. And so it kind of left that, I don't want to say bad taste in your mouth, but you're just left disappointed.
Yeah. If there were a word that sort of softened that a little bit, I mean, I was not let down necessarily, but it was one of those things where I really kind of wish they did something. And it doesn't even have to be extensive. It could be 45 seconds of seeing a character after an episode ends and you see one of the companions of the week returning to their lives and making a decision as to whether or not they're going to share with everyone the experiences that they just had. Even that is just like a nice little button to get as a gift. But I don't know. Or somebody just, you know, as the, you know, you take the Mummy episode and you get two people sort of walking off saying, "So, have you ever heard of this Gus character?" And credits, you know, blackout.
Yeah.
Little something. Because you make a promise, well, he never promised. Oh, he's very careful about his words. You make a statement out there that gets people's expectations for that additional distribution medium. We're hoping you'll...
Yeah, and it's not like they've never done it before. We had, you know, a couple of short ones of the Paternoster gang. We, in the past, had those little bits with Rory and Amy.
Yeah, the pond life, yeah.
Yeah.
And those even were had so much fun.
Yeah.
I remember one of the ones that actually just kind of blew my mind was, or just because I just loved the way it got us talking, was, you remember the one with the swing set and young Clara?
Yeah.
I mean, leading into that was that Rings of Akaten?
I believe so. That was when we met her parents and everything like that, yeah.
Yes, precisely. So, you know, you see the 7-year-old swinging back and forth, camera pulls back, there's Matt Smith sort of goofily swinging next to her, they have this nice little moment. It's completely unrelated to the episode, it's not unrelated, but unnecessary for the episode. But it just, it adds this extra little layer, and it just, you know, those are the things where if you've got the time to do it, the precedent has been set. You know, you've given us these things before. Moffat himself has given us these things before. Pond Life in particular was a very well thought out little mini series of webisodes.
Yeah.
Is that half a dozen of them or so?
No, it was just 5 of them.
Okay. Well, sorry, I was off by one. But
learn to count, damn it.
God, 1, 2, 5, 3, sir, 3. But that's the kind of thing. And I know we were setting the bar really high. We're like, I want to see Eighth Doctor. God damn it.
Well, even if it's just, you know, a scene they had to delete for whatever reason from the episode, a webisode is a nice way to release that. I'm thinking there was the episode they didn't even shoot. It was just storyboard of at the end of the pond run where you had Brian Pond meeting the son they had adopted.
Holy hell, yeah. And that was heart-wrenching.
Yeah.
But yeah, or outtakes. Oh my God, what would we wouldn't give for outtakes? A blooper reel? Are you kidding me? I would pay. I'd pay more for a blooper reel from each series than I would pay for the series on DVD.
That's the only reason to buy a show on DVD is to get blooper reels and deleted scenes and commentaries and things like that.
Yeah,
the episodes themselves. That's why I have Netflix.
Hello, I already have the internet. I downloaded that.
All right. So what's the next news story that we've got here?
Haley.
We kind of already talked about this one a little bit, but Rigsy is returning in an episode for this season of Doctor Who.
Yeah. This is exciting news because he was a great character. He was really awesome, and I'm glad to see him returning. I hope, and I've said that, I don't know if I've said it on the show yet, but I really, really hope that they give him growth. I want character growth from him. You know, show how he's been impacted from Flatline. You know, show some kind of advancement with his character instead of just like, oh, look, here he is. He's been waiting around for the Doctor to show up again, and nothing has changed.
The boy who waited.
Yeah.
Well, they stubbed him out a little bit. I mean, insofar as, you know, the you originally kind of pictured him, okay, Asbo kid, graffiti, just, you know, small time, little fringe of society, didn't really have a whole lot going for him. And we get some of the realization that he has the potential for a much larger identity. And it's actually recognized not so much by the Doctor as Clara that brings that out of him, which I think is important. I think it's one of those things where he may be rolling along well with the grander nature of everything that he's had his eyes opened up to, but as far as the viewers look into the character, that's done by a character who better resembles us as the audience, rather than having the wizard in form of the Doctor who says, you know, I see inside your heart, and, you know, and that sort of an approach. This is something where a human character recognizes the fact that we're dealing with someone who has value and merit and the potential to be something much more than what they've been given the opportunity to be.
The teacher sees the potential in a student.
Correct. And the fact that the teacher here is not the professor in the form of the Doctor, but someone much more, literally, down to earth. So that worked out serendipitously. But I think that means that if we do end up, as Jay is hoping, to get a much more well-rounded character, that does open the door very well to potential, even occasional companion, someone who can be checked in with or relied upon down the road to be a touch point with the public. If this Doctor in particular, especially when Clara is no longer in the picture, is having some difficulty communicating with commons, or normal human types, then he's got Riggsy as a buffer, some sort of filter.
that could be a problem.
So yeah, I've got a lot of expectations for this too, and I'm glad to see him back. He's a genuinely endearing character and a good acting talent as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it'll be fun to see how that gets played out. And then the last bit of news that the next news article that we've got is that see, where are we at here? Hang on.
It's not so easy now, is it?
Oh, let's discuss the Vine clip.
Okay.
Please, yeah. Let's do this.
All right. So there is a 4-second little Vine clip of Peter Capaldi.
Being a total badass.
In his costume, just rocking out on a guitar.
Yeah, he ends up in a guitar shop with what appears to be a Gibson. It's not a Telecaster. I'm not really sure. I'll have to go back and watch it again. But it's just him getting his oi punk on for a couple of seconds. And you know what? Decent form. He's got good guitar face.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, he's just playing rhythm at this point. It's all right. It's nothing but power chords.
Well, it's only 4 seconds.
That's all right. In a nice E minor power chord riff progression. So, and his hair is voluminous and impressive. He is definitely, this season, they have decided to let the Pertwee hair go full ballistic.
Yeah.
So it's enjoyable stuff. I just wish there was more of a backstory behind this. I'll have to check some of the comments to see precisely who this, apparently this individual, Robin, that originates from, who just, how the hell did they catch them? How do you just walk in to a shop and, oh, look, there's Peter Capaldi. Oh, look, it's Peter Capaldi in costume. Oh, look, it's Peter Capaldi in costume in a music shop who has decided to play a rock riff.
Yeah. It could very possibly be that there is a scene that happens in a music shop, and Capaldi's just like, no, hang on, before we go anywhere, I need to try this thing out. And okay. Somebody from the crew is just like, I'm getting this on camera.
Too much. All right, well, to wrap up our news, which is just I love reading this through because it kind of touches on a lot of things that are kind of relevant to what's going on within the Whovian right now. It's a great interview that the Telegraph had with Peter Davison. They chose to headline the whole thing with his discussion of what it's like having another another doctor in the family. But the vast majority of the article, he has to do his history with the series during and after, specifically, and his involvement and continued involvement with Doctor Who scope. Right now, obviously, hosting the UK leg of the Symphonic Spectacular, his involvement or his writing and production of Five-ish Doctors, and everything involved with that too. And then he goes on to say, "Well, life with David's rather weird."
So, can't imagine how that would be the case.
No. Well, you think about it. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, if he sort of got familiar with him because they wanted to just go see, what are they went to his principal filming, sort of visit on set and see how everything was, and it was just kind of a family tour. It's, oh, look, you're famous, I'm famous, you're my doctor, isn't that great, and it's so charming and all. And then, you know, within about a year or two, he's kind of showing up for family functions, and, oh, by the way, I'm engaged to your daughter. Yeah, weird is a safe way of putting that.
Yeah, I guess so.
Unfortunately, nothing alluding to whether or not we would see a sequel to the Five-ish Doctors. I know that's gone sort of round and round as to whether or not we'd see another one of these things. I have to agree with the statement that the column maker made about this, which just says that there was a certain message that was being conveyed from the Five-ish Doctors reboot, as far as the kind of the tongue-in-cheek nature with the old school being locked out literally from the new school and that sort of thing. But and that he would not want to be involved with something unless it met that bar or exceeded. And he doesn't know whether or not, he personally cannot conceive of a storyline for even a short film that could do that yet. He's leaving that in Peter's lap to see what can conceive something of that sort. But I'm not terribly worried if we don't get into it. I'd love to see it. That's fine. But
yeah,
that piece is just so endearing in and of itself. You know, I let it stand on its own.
Yeah, exactly. So, but yeah, it's well worth the read if you get the chance to, if you've got the time to sit down and read it.
And we'll be seeing him at Gallifrey One next year.
Yeah, that's true. But another convention, though, that we're gearing up for before that is the LI Who, which we've talked about a little bit. And they have just announced their, or basically came out and talked about their guest appearances a little bit. I know we got excited last week because Gemma Redgrave was going to be there, and unfortunately she has had to back out. So she is no longer going to be attending, and I think someone else who was supposed to be there as well.
Nick Briggs.
Nick Briggs, that's right, yeah. So he's
hopefully
not...
Jason Hagelery will be there, so we'll get a chance to chat with him again. So,
but we do get replacements, though, and I'd have to...
Upgrades? Well, no, that's not fair. It's a parallel.
So, but Paul McGann will be returning for L.I. Who, and Wendy Padbury.
Sit on the bed. The doctor says sit on the bed.
Yeah, we'll see if we get another invite this time.
Proposition, perhaps.
But also Wendy Padbury has been added to the guest roster. So,
yeah, and she's always a delight to have, because especially when you get a chance for her to be able to sit up there with Frasier, the two of them have more twisted stories about the things that they did and got away with. And Wendy is still just absolutely adorable. She is one of the just, she's like one of those pixies you just want to put in your pocket and keep around all the time. Mm-hmm. Although she, do not discuss the suit with her, the shiny suit. She does not want to talk about that anymore. But she will lose her mind if she sees anyone under the age of 12 wearing a Zoe suit. Just putting that out there for anyone
just
considering
be aware.
Cosplay for November.
Well, now I know what I'm going to cosplay.
That's not disturbing at all.
Bring two cameras.
All right. Well, that's all the news that we've got this week. So next week, we're actually going to have a great chance. We will have Paul Cornell on the show to interview him.
Yes, so. He's been gracious enough to give us some of his time to discuss his writing for Doctor Who, some of his writing for his novel, like the Shadow Police series, his writing for the Doctor Who comic series, including the Four Doctors. I'm sorry, just Four Doctors, not the Four Doctors.
No, just Four Doctors.
They're just calling it Four Doctors, which will be releasing just in August, I believe, and the upcoming This Damn Band on Dark Horse Comic, and everything else in between. So be great opportunity to chat with him a little bit. He was very gracious with all of the guests at Galley One this past year and is giving us some more of his time. So if there's anything that you want to chime in, I'll be speaking with him on Friday. So by the time this drops, you'll still have a couple of days. Please feel free to share in the comments anything you want us to convey along to him. Positive feedback, questions, concerns, whether or not he's one of the mystery writers for the last three episodes of this season, maybe. I
Fingers
don't know.
Crossed.
Yeah, really.
All right. Yeah. So, but I'm not going to be here next week. I'm actually going to give the keys to the studio to Kieran Haley and pray to God that the insurance premiums are paid up. So,
Haley, we're painting the walls black and we're using that glow paint for a stellar effect. And we're just going to fling it at the walls and get some black lights. It's going to kick ass.
Yeah, this can't turn out badly at all.
I don't know what you're worried about.
All right, well, this has been episode 140 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying 2 weeks off. Peace out, bitches.
Wow. Well, apparently we're going for the explicit tag this week. And this is Kira saying, I'm so tired. I'm just going to... Haley, get us the hell out of here.
This is Haley saying, let's play 6 degrees of Colin Bacon.
Nice.
That's getting cut out. You can't use that.
Nope. Your... Leave it in. Now you got to leave the other thing.
It's already happened. Colin Bacon.
Oh, jeez. We'll see you guys next week.
Colin Bacon.
Bye.
I'll see you.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com. Tell us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.
Gallifrey Public Radio is copyright 2015.
All right. Insert bump here because I forgot to plug in my iPad. That's it. That's the new one this week. I'm keeping with it.
Blam! Crash! Is that the best you can do? Ha ha ha. You had to ask.
Did you just say womp womp?
I'm watching my trailers with a fisheye lens.
New podcast for the network. Strong bad emails.
Oh, God.
Dude, we should totally do a soul cast that's just us going back to just... Oh, my God. Week one.
There's over 200 of them. I mean, come on.
That could just be GPR off season. There we go.
Homestar Retro.
Oh, God.
That's what it is. Live in the 90s all over again.
I was
going
to say, welcome back to 1998.
Fish on.
It's not calm.
God, we could stretch it out for years if we included stuff other than Strong Bad Emails.
We totally right. could. Just an entire year on Easter eggs.
Allie or Allie's sister?
I mean, how many times do you always refer to it as the Lappy?
Oh, yeah. All the time.
It's almost exclusively.
It's yeah, the it's the Lappy or the Compy or the...
the print.
Yeah.
The paper. The
it's,
print.
No, it's the paper.
No, it was the print.
No, it was the paper.
So no, it was the print and then knew the print.
I want a text message that sounds like a dot matrix. That's my text tone. Picky.
Oh,
anywho. Geez. News! Games!
Oh, God. This is just completely crashing and burning.
Wow, the sheer amount of editing is large and voluminous. Timestamp.
Welcome!
For those of you keeping track at home, Jay is now on page 2 of his edit notes. And the timestamp on the recording is only 31 minutes.
And Kieran Haley aren't helping at all.
Son of a bitch.
Oh, God.
This is some tasty Pinot Noir.
Oh, God. Every last bit of this is going in at the end. Utilize that, right? It's just cut it and put it at the end.
Yeah.
I don't understand. The outro music played and there's 5 more minutes on this goddamn cast. What the hell am I listening to? Well, Kier's passing gas. Haley's falling out of her chair.